Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas. Here it's Naturally Green at SaverLife.com, and winter has arrived. Been a mild start to winter, and this past week, and today, some very, very cold weather, but not, people make fun of me for saying dangerously cold. If you're not wearing the right clothes, it certainly is, but it's not, we've had much colder weather than this, but cold enough, basically below 10 degrees, 12 degrees, where I have to go out and cut the buds off my winter sweet and bring them into bloom, which I did, and one of those buds opened within a day. I've mentioned it before. It's a unusual shrub, which is was propagated from my grandmother's in near San Francisco, and it doesn't often send out a lot of flower buds. I think partly because I have it next to an apple tree, which I just have gets too big. Shades this winter sweet too much, I think. But I do get some buds, and occasionally they will open during the winter, unless, like a year ago, in November, we had super cold weather long before Thanksgiving. And winter sweet buds didn't have a chance, but this year they came close to blooming outside, brought them in, and now they're opening. They're very sweet, almost like a jasmine fragrance, not especially showy, but just a beautiful shrub. In the summer, big green leaves, the flowers are not showy, but then again, what else is blooming in January in your garden? Not much. So hoping to get some of these over to Ted Hildebrand at Coldwater Pond. He is one of the really good propagators of shrub and tree material in our area, and been meaning to get some over to him for years. Maybe I'm not sure he's going to want to try and grow this to sell to customers, because it's pretty tender, at least for blooming. And I live in the city of Rochester. It's next to a fence protected from the west. It is maybe micro zone 7 versus we're generally zone 6. So it would take pretty specific location for it to bloom. But then again, it might be fun to experiment with. So we'll let you know if he's able to do some propagating. And interested in doing it. There's lots of great online seminars going on right now, and not ideal time to be out pruning in your garden. It might be a good time to learn more about gardening online. And the Birdhouse, for example, at 10 a.m. this morning is going to have their weekly Saturday get together, and Liz Magnotti's going to talk about birding here in our area. It's kind of a different theme each week. Those are free online. That's at the Birdhouse on Facebook. And also found a couple of interesting ones, organizations that I've been connected to for a long time, the Ecological Landscaping Association, our Ecological Landscape Alliance. They have a series. They're going to be doing one just a few days from now, February 3rd, on the American Oaks Diversity, Ecology, and Identification. Tim Boland is going to do this, and it's really, the organization is based in New England, like in Massachusetts. And so a lot of what they do is based here in the Northeast. And the description says he'll paint a picture of the genus Quercus, which is a Latin name for the genus that oaks are in, including its fascinating evolutionary history, and moving forward in time will address challenges posed by climate change. And there are some very serious diseases that are attacking oaks, oak wilt, probably the scariest of them. And he says, or the description says, he'll also illuminate the deep connection oaks have to humanity across the world and explain why they're widely considered to be the ecological glue that holds plant communities together. And really, not just plant communities, but you think of all the animals, squirrels in particular, but many others that use the acorns as one of their main food sources. And of course, you know, if there aren't those squirrels and mice and other things, then the predators of those won't have much to eat. You know, the foxes and coyotes and hawks. So they play a huge role in our ecology. And there are many different oaks. And we're lucky where we live that there are a lot of them here. And they're actually named in Highland Park. So you can go and see the different kinds of oaks. They vary a lot in the bark, in the branching, and certainly in the leaves. The acorns look very different, this is a one-hour webinar that Tim Boland's going to be doing, and it's $10 if you're not a member of the Ecological Landscape Alliance. They do some really neat programs. Another one that's coming up is Garden Design for Child Development. Says whether in a home setting or a schoolyard habitat, children's gardens require not only understanding of basic landscape design, but also special consideration of the development of children for their safety, engagement, and socialization. So in this class, you'll learn how to design a children's garden that appeals to all five senses, evokes playfulness and learning, and instills a love of nature that will grow into stewardship and environmental sensitivity. It's over 2 days, February 5th and 12th, 10:30 to 1:30. So this is, in total, a six-hour class. Again, Garden Design for Child Development. And some fascinating topics. Maybe this applies for your children. You want to design a garden, maybe for grandchildren or nieces or nephews or neighbors, or you want to work with the school, the local school, many ways to use this. And many people are children at heart, so these same principles, these same ideas can be used for gardens, for people of all ages. So it's Ecological Landscape Association. They've got a lot of other seminars and presentations, meetings, things that go on over the course of the year. Been around for quite a while. It's ecolandscaping.org. You can find more details there. They also have one of the articles on the website, a really good overview of plastic pots and kind of what's happening in terms of trying to find, you know, biodegradable pots or pots that are easier to recycle, or alternatives to what we're doing now. And you know, the Rush to Public Market has a large bin, like apples are often shipped in, you know, like maybe 4 feet by 4 feet, that you can put pots that you want to recycle in. And other people, sometimes the farmers, growers will take them, or consumers, or someone who's doing a plant sale, or kids who have a project, they can pick up those pots. So you know, instead of putting your plastic pots in the recycling bin, maybe, you know, it's even better if they can be reused, because there's no processing required, and also some of the plastics in some of these pots are not as recyclable as others. So a really interesting article on kind of where we stand right now and where some of the research is going on. It's an update, plastic pots used in the green industry, from about a week or a couple weeks ago. And the it's by Marie Chepo, and says the Association of Professional Landscape Designers, their sustainability committee asked her to research this topic a couple years ago, and you can link to the research paper that she put out last summer. Plastic pots in the green industry, production, use, disposal, and environmental impact. Kind of a update on what's happening. And tons of other interesting articles on all aspects of landscaping, maybe from a different point of view than you might normally get. Cornell has a lot of great programs, and you should look up Cornell Cooperative Extension in Monroe County to see what they're doing. There's some great resources here in our area to learn more about gardening, to do some research this winter. Maybe try some areas that of gardening that you haven't tried before. Try to figure out a way to create a moss garden. If you do, let me know, because that's one I've struggled with. This is a year you want to attract as many butterfly species as possible. So, you know, of course, you'd have milkweed for the monarchs, but there are many other plants that attract specific butterflies, and then some plants that just attract a lot of butterflies, like zinnias. Or maybe you want to create a hummingbird garden this spring. And so, you know, once you have a goal like that in mind, it doesn't need to be a 100-foot row of flowers for butterflies or hummingbirds. You know, could be 4 feet by 4 feet, some section of your landscape where you can concentrate on doing this, or it can be any size. It could be a couple of containers. You know, how many different hummingbird or butterfly flowering plants can you get in a couple of big containers to put on a deck or patio or porch or something? So it doesn't need to be huge scale, but once you have that goal in mind, it's kind of fun to do the research. You'll run into plants that won't grow that well here. But in general, I think most of what you'll run into, unless it's something written about Florida, in general, I think much of what you read will probably apply here. We're not that far north, but we're also not that far south and that warm. So, gotta be a little bit careful when reading that they're talking about climate zones in the 5 and 6 range generally. And the things they're talking about for those ranges should do well here. So again, find a theme for a new area of your garden, or to transition one that you are you want to move on. You've tired with perhaps what is in there. And if you want to grow more things to eat in 2021, you have missed the NOFA conference itself, which is Northeast Organic Farming Association of New York, but their workshop recordings are available online through late February. And for $50, you can access all of those recordings. And they are extensive range of workshops, it's a fascinating organization. You may not want the ones in about dairy workshops, but you might really love the ones on seeds or growing all kinds of vegetables. Many of the workshops are geared to farmers, so some might be too technical for you, but many of them are not that technical. And even if you aren't going to grow Wheat yourself, you might be interested in one of their workshops on growing wheat or tons of different things that they have. And the again, for $50, you can access these. You can go to nofany.org and look up some of the different categories of these workshops, from business and marketing to gardening and homesteading, urban farming, vegetable and seed production, soil health, policy, kitchen demos, growing hemp, fruit, livestock, dairy. There's a lot of different categories that are available. And again, for $50, you can spend the next, basically the next month through February 23rd, listening to some of these and kind of exploring. And hopefully next year you'll want to go to the NOFA conference, which by next January, it's always in January. And they've been holding it in Saratoga Springs for quite a while, so I imagine they will be back there. You may want to go in person next January once you get a sense for these workshops online. So again, for $50, it's a bargain for all the different workshops you can visit over the next month. And it's nofany.org. And again, sort of like the other workshops, the other programs, Ecological Landscaping Alliance, you may decide you do one of the webinars, you want to become a member, at which point a lot of those webinars are free, and you have a couple of months this winter now to do some really good research, because there's not that much you can do out in the garden. They are pruning in the vineyards, maybe not the coldest days. If the wind chills get cold enough, they probably don't go out and prune. But they're out there almost every day in the vineyards pruning. They start, really in maybe even late December, January, certainly this month, and then work their way through the vineyard January, February, March, and try to wrap it up at some point late March, early April, then get ready for the new season to start grapes to start growing. And they start with the hardiest varieties, because these are varieties that really never get much winter damage. The natives like Concord and Niagara, Delaware, the French American hybrids, they go next. And some of those are tougher than others, so they will do the toughest ones first. And then really the last grapes to be pruned are the vinifera, the Rieslings, the Cabernets, etc., Chardonnay. And some of those are quite tender. And so Pinot Noir, Gewurztraminer, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, these are grapes that often get some winter damage. You might even say usually, and for some of those varieties like Gewurztraminer. And so they wait to prune them until last, because the amount of winter damage really determines how they prune. And if there's a lot of winter damage, they'll leave more buds. They have to leave more buds, because half of them or three quarters of them have been damaged by winter cold. They can still be damaged by late winter cold snaps and by late frosts, in May. But again, they're at this point holding off pruning, because we can get some seriously cold weather during the winter. By March, it's less likely to happen, and so they'll start pruning those more tender varieties. So they're, again, pruning all winter. Apple trees, pruning all winter. I'm going to prune mine here at some point, which get lots of tall suckers, and then I save those for kindling. They make great kindling. And give my trees a haircut. there's some, I'm sure, some great seminars and things on pruning that are available. So if you're looking for any particular subject you want more information on, send me an email, michael@saverlife.com. And if you cut some plants to force into bloom, like forsythia, let me know how they're doing. If you've gotten any flowers yet, how long perhaps you've had them indoors. And if you don't have any, you should go out and cut some. Ask a friend or a family member if you can cut some of theirs if you don't have any forsythia, because those yellow flowers are really, they're great to see on a cold winter day. We'll be back in the next hour with For Love of Food, Discover the Finger Lakes after that. Tomorrow, The Grapevine, 9 a.m. here. It's Michael Warren Thomas at SaverLife.com. Send me details, photos, questions, and be happy to help you. Good luck with your winter gardening research. Have a great day.